Watch podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch podcast, we're going to discuss a recent publication put together by NCBA as well as Cattle Facts that focuses on the value of cull cows and bulls. The title of this publication is Right Way, Right Time, A Guide to Cull Cattle Management. To discuss this publication, I'm joined today by Jesse Fulton, who's the Nebraska Director of Beef Quality Assurance, as well as Patrick Linnell, who's part of the team at Cattle Facts. Thanks for joining me today, guys.
Thanks for having us on today, Aaron.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Happy to be here.
Well, Patrick, we've had Jesse on the Beef Watch podcast before, but this is your first time. So just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, sure, Aaron. So my role at Cattle Facts, I'm Director of Cattle Market Research and Analysis. With that, I do a number of different things for our business, but all kind of centered around helping people across the beef supply chain, producers in particular, really manage these markets. I do a lot of our fundamental analysis and forecasting from a long-term perspective, helping folks try to understand supply and demand trends. And then I also do work quite a bit with our producer members directly, really just helping them try to understand how to navigate the uncertainty and volatility that we've had no shortage of in recent years, and work through those challenges. I grew up in northeastern Oregon with a cow-calf and seed stock background, and made my way to CSU, Colorado State, where I did my undergrad and master's, and then went directly to Cattle Facts from there.
Jesse, you've been part of the BQA team in Nebraska here for quite a while, but you were part of the NCBA group before that, and you actually helped develop this publication. Tell us more about the content and the value.
Yeah, Aaron. So the whole idea behind this document was really to point out some findings from the most recent 2022 National Beef Quality Audit that was a part of the cull, market cow, and bull side of the audit. So what we were really trying to point out is just how producers might be leaving value on the table when it comes to culling those animals. And so in order to capture that value, actually marketing those animals in a timely fashion to try to eliminate as many of the defects that we typically see during cow-bull slaughter, essentially. So a lot of these defects were pointed out in the audit, but we really wanted to focus the spotlight down on some certain things. And so that was the whole idea behind this document.
So Jesse, highlight for us some of the things that are in the document in terms of what are some of the major challenges at the harvest level when we look at market cows and bulls? What are the leading defects that seem to come to the top?
Yeah, so one thing that we really started at the very beginning from the time that that animal leaves the farm or ranch. And so a part of this was transportation. So in the audit, and what we point out in this document is that a majority of cull cows or bulls that get on a truck spend about 6 hours on that truck. But we wanted to highlight the maximum time, and the maximum time was up to 24 hours traveling almost 1,100 miles. And so what plays into that is the fitness for transport of that animal. And when we talk about fitness for transport from a BQA perspective, we're really looking at three things. We're looking at the health status of that animal. We're looking at the body condition score of that animal and the mobility score of that animal. So in this document, we were really showing some body condition scoring because we have seen from the audit that body condition scoring has actually decreased the condition of those animals that are going to slaughter. And so we really want to point out why that's a problem. So, transportation is often linked to being one of the most stressful times in an animal's life when they're being shipped across the country or to the local locker, essentially. And so the reason why condition is so important is because they need to be able to withstand the rigors of transport. And so having those energy stores in their body, essentially, to be able to account for the stress that's involved during transportation. A couple other things that we pointed out was mobility score. Typically don't have a major problem with mobility score when it comes to those animals, but it's something that we want to keep an eye on just to make sure we don't have those problems. Some other defects, and one defect that producers often overlook. So we're talking about cull cows, right? And so there's many producers that as soon as they wean that calf, they don't want to pour any more resources into that cow. And so they're ready to send her on to the sell barn. And so what can happen is right after the sell barn, that cow could end up at a harvest facility within 72 hours, essentially. And a problem with a defect that we see is a full bag or a full udder. Now, the reason why that's a problem is because when they are harvesting that animal, if they accidentally open that bag during the process of removing the hide and, you know, doing their processing, and milk spills onto the carcass from the bag, that is considered by USDA FSIS, or Food Inspection Service, as an adulterant. And so any product that that milk touch has to be trimmed away from the carcass and discarded. It is not no longer able to be consumed by the public. Another defect that's often overlooked is arthritic joints. Now, we don't have a major problem with arthritic joints. Typically, that has been within the last two audits, so back to 2016, arthritic joints have been less than 2%, which is a huge win for the industry, because it was up to 10% of the cows coming in had an arthritic joint. Again, that goes back to an adulterant, in that when they are removing the joints, essentially, and they pop that arthritic joint and fluid leaks from it onto the carcass, they have to trim all that off. And so that is considered a defect. Finally, the last defect that we really pointed out here was the hidden defect. And what we mean by the hidden defect is foreign objects. This is no surprise that we've talked about this way back in the 90s, that birdshot was a problem at one point in the beef industry. Still today, birdshot is a problem in the beef industry. 100% of the packers that were a part of the National Beef Quality Audit reported finding birdshot in carcasses that come to their facility. And half of those packers reported customer complaints, which is a big deal, because when a customer's complaining about it, that means the birdshot got outside of the packing plant to where it could end up landing on a consumer's plate, which is the absolute worst thing that we could happen for the image of the beef industry. So those are just real quick highlights of what we covered in this document when it comes from a beef welfare perspective.
Jesse, you mentioned birdshot. I guess in the audit, what percent of carcasses are showing this? I think that would be of interest as we talk about this issue.
Yeah, Aaron. So we would love to have that number. We have asked our packers, you know, if they could share that number with us on how often. It is something that's a little bit hard to track for them. Again, they just were able to report that, yes, we do find it. Some of them even said that it's an everyday occurrence in certain places. Often when we talk about birdshot with producers, they do ask us the question, is this a regionality issue? And the answer is no. It is all across the country. We have producers, it doesn't matter what state they're in, where cattle are coming from that state, where birdshot is being found. So it's not regionality. It's kind of hard to figure out how many typically a packer sees in a day. So I don't have that information.
So let's just talk a little more about the value of market cows and bulls. And I'm going to point to you here, Patrick, in terms of, we look at the current market price for these from a historic actual value. We're seeing some tremendous value right now in these market cows and bulls. I guess share with us just a little bit about how we might need to think about that as we think about the cow-calf enterprise and the total dollars they bring back.
Yeah, Aaron. I mean, as you think about the way these cattle markets have moved so much substantially higher here over the last couple of years, I mean, it's hard to downplay how much value these cull cows and bulls as well do represent to the operation. And I think it also really comes down to, to let me back up, I think that's really where we really enjoyed the opportunity to work with NCBA and the BQA team on this publication, because it's so cool how, you know, value to the operation can just go so hand in hand to value to the industry and, you know, good animal welfare. Because as you said, Aaron, you know, when you're talking about a cull cow that's worth $1,200 to $1,500 per head or more, or a bull that's worth $2,000 per head, I mean, that deserves some attention. And pretty often, you know, while we might spend a lot of time focusing on, you know, how we're going to market our calves, a lot of times, you know, the cull side can become a bit of a second thought. And at these values, it certainly deserves plenty of attention.
So Jesse, just thinking about the value a little bit, I think we often think about and we joke a little bit, well, that cow, she's headed to the Golden Arches, but there's a lot more than ground beef that comes from these market cows and bulls, in particular cows.
Yeah, for sure. There's oftentimes that producers you know, I don't want to beat up on them, but sometimes we don't think about that once that cow or that bull is done doing their job of what we purchased them for, and that's having calves, or making calves, that they will become a beef product. And it's not just ground beef. You know, that those middle meats will end up, you know, probably not oftentimes where we might prefer to dine, but they do land on buffets. Or, you know, you think about getting a prime rib dinner for $15.99 somewhere at some special. You know, that could be one of those that where those middle meats can land. Additionally, there's companies out there that besides ground beef companies that purchase this product because it makes a really good roast beef sandwich, because it is usually around, or let's just say a high lean product. And so that's why it's important to remember that there is a lot of value in these cull cows and in the product those cull cows are going to produce. And so we need to make sure that while they're on our property or under our care, that we are ensuring that we are still producing a safe product for consumers at the end of the supply chain.
And Jesse, I would just, I mean, to extend a point you just made there, I mean, I think also just the ground beef side in itself is so important as well. I mean, thinking about how some estimates show that it's roughly 50% of beef domestically that's consumed in the form of ground beef. Every single burger that we send out as an industry, you know, it's important that a consumer has a positive experience. And certainly think of how, you know, off put you or I would be, you know, taking a bite of, you know, of a burger and finding some buckshot in it.
Yeah, Patrick, you know, you hit a great point there on the ground beef. So for those listening, you know, Patrick and myself were down at the Cattle Industry Convention. We got to hear from Dr. Wayne Morgan, who is a VP for Golden State Foods, and he gave a presentation aligning with this document. And one of the things that he brought up was there are times where birdshot or a piece of wire or a needle, if we break a needle off in a cow and you just forget about that, that's a problem for one from a food safety and standpoint. But sometimes that foreign material isn't found until it goes through the grinder. So now we had a BB or a needle that was potentially an inch long that just went through a grinder and it's been essentially pulverized to where now it's fine shavings. And then it is found through a metal detector or an X-ray, and they have to dispose of that product. And they'll dispose of not just what product lights up on the metal detector, but the whole combo or the whole product that come from that case. And it can be up to 60,000 pounds of beef that they'll throw away in one shot. And that is just, that does not help us as an industry tell that sustainability message, because that's not sustainable. That amount of food waste is not sustainable. So that's why it's so important to prevent these foreign defects from even entering the carcass in the first place.
One of the things you mentioned, Jesse, that really I think ties to our conversation as well is just condition of these cows when they go to slaughter. And we know we've had some drought conditions across many parts of the US. And when you're out of feed, you're out of feed. And sometimes a producer is sending a cow to market that they aren't proud of, so to speak. They know they're not in the condition they'd like them to be, but they don't have any other good options. That having been said, there is some importance and some value in having these cows in good condition when they go to harvest. First, I'll throw it to you, Jesse, just to talk about the importance of that. And then, Patrick, let's just talk about the added value in terms of classes of cows when we're looking at what they value at when they're weighed up.
Yeah, so having that body condition score on those animals is really important from a consumer image, because there are times where activist organizations might go into a sale barn with hidden cameras, and when we have seen this, we have heard about it from Livestock Marketing Association, and they'll put those images out, and consumers don't want to see skinny cows, right? And so BQA has kind of set some guidelines on that to really protect us from that, but also brings the science into it, into making sure those animals have the condition to, again, withstand those rigors of transport. And so our guidance is not to market an animal that is a body condition score of 2 or less. We really want them to be a 3 or greater. And so what we really teach is if our target goal is having a cow that's a 5 or a 6, and we know that after weaning we might be dipping down into the 4s, 4.5s, but if that's our target goal is the 5 and 6, it gives us up to 3 body condition scores to really make up our mind of, okay, she's losing condition. I've poured some extra resources into her to turn her around, but it's not happening. I need to get her off my place now and go ahead and get her to the cell barn. I agree that there are many producers out there that they don't want to send an animal that has lost too much condition. But I will say that if she's a 3 and, you know, you don't market 3s, we would rather you send that 3 than allow her to fall to a 2. And then that your last option is to get rid of her because she is not bouncing back. So go ahead and market that animal as a 3. And yeah, there is added value to that. And I'll let Patrick really discuss what we can see with that.
Yeah. I mean, as Jesse, as you say, as we look at our prices, or we, you know, look back at some prices for comparing utility cows to those, you know, a fleshier female to a canter cutter, you know, or a leaner female, there obviously is some pretty substantial price differences. As you look over the last couple of years, it's pretty firmly around 15% or more increase. And again, it's obviously a scale. You know, there's no one magic threshold on where adding some flesh, you know, it increases value. But I think that just does go to show how much potential value there is. And then, you know, you do combine that with the fact that, again, a fleshier cow will tend to weigh more. So not only is it more dollars per pound, but it's on more pounds. It can pretty quickly add up to $200-$300 or more per head. And so certainly, you know, again, if there is the ability to add flesh to some of those cows, considering doing that and trying to upgrade them before transporting them. And as you said, Jesse, you know, putting them through the rigors of the supply chain and what that entails. But then to the flip side also, you know, from a marketing standpoint, and a strategy standpoint, if, you know, realistically, if she doesn't have the ability to gain some weight back and add flesh, then again, there is just value in getting her down the road before she continues to degrade. And that's also setting aside, you know, the fact that if she is going to continue to fall off, what's the risk that she doesn't make it off the operation? Either you know, she's subject to death loss, or, you know, we have to euthanize her for a reason. Or again, if you do take her to the sale barn, what's the risk that, you know, the buyer sees she may not make it through the supply chain, so they're going to price that into her and discount her appropriately. And so just thinking towards things like that, that there is that right way, right time aspect, you know, marketing on a timely basis and kind of being realistic about, are we going to be able to add flesh or not?
One of the things that you brought up, Patrick, I think is, you know, really important. What I hear you saying is, let's be thoughtful, let's be purposeful as we think about marketing cows and bulls. And I, you know, I think a lot of times we're focused on the calf end and we see the calf check, and that is a big deal. But a significant part of many cow-calf producers' income is from these cows and bulls, as we already talked about. And so giving some thought to how and when those are marketed really can add value.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I would encourage any of your listeners to, you know, make sure to pull up this document and look through it, because from a marketing standpoint, we ran through a couple strategies and put some numbers around it. But again, we know that it's never one size fits all. No two operations are alike. No 2 years are alike. But really just thinking about how we can incorporate different strategies, and that what just trying to be thought provoking about what works on, you know, any individual's operation. To your point there, Aaron, I mean, it is amazing as you look at the cull cow market, how consistent the seasonal patterns are in terms of price. Pretty consistently from August and September into October, November, cull cow prices drop 10%. Is there a way to even market a portion of those cows earlier ahead of that drop? And my kind of rule of thumb is ahead of Labor Day, if you're able to get those to town. Again, if you're a spring calving operator. And then conversely, is there an ability to roll those cows in out of that fourth quarter low in the market and add some weight? I guess especially those females that are capable of adding some flesh. and take them into the new year and kind of getting them past a February 15th timeframe and getting them past that glut of cull cows that comes to the market in the fourth quarter. Prices rise as well. So again, if it works for different producers, you're not only adding weight, but you're getting market appreciation as well. As you know, the market prices start to improve as you start approaching spring grilling demand. So just different things like that. But again, just knowing some of those seasonal market factors and thinking about how they work, how they might be able to be taken advantage of for the individual operation is something we really encourage folks to take a look at.
Well, Jesse, Patrick, anything else you'd like to highlight in this document that you think would be of value for producers to know and understand as we point towards wrapping up?
Yeah, Aaron, I guess the one thing I kind of want to just close out on is throughout this document, we were working alongside other producers, but also experts in the industry in their respective fields. And so throughout the document, you'll come across certain quotes, and there's a couple that I really like to point out and reflect back on. And some of those are actually from the sell barn. And one of those is, the sell barn's asking producers, don't bring your problems to town. If she's iffy at the farm or the ranch on, should I take this animal to sell? She should probably just stay there at the farm and be humanely euthanized or treated to where she is in better condition, to where she would be more of a candidate for marketing. And they also reflected back on how the buyers are watching for these defects, you know, so eye problems in the fall of the year will result in valuable discounts, treated versus non-treated, and if she's blind in one eye versus blind in both eyes. And then finally, to close it out, these cows, they've been good to us. They've been good to you. Your herd has been good to you. She's helped pay your bills. She's given you calves to help you carry on your legacy as a rancher or a beef cattle producer. So it's time for you to show her that same respect and be good to her as she makes her final trip down the road, right, to enter into the beef supply chain. So that's really what I just want to have producers reflect on.
And I would just extend on that. As Jesse said, I think it's, from our perspective and working through this project, it's pretty clear that, especially as it comes to cull cows, BQA is profitable for the producer. And what's good for the cows tends to be good for us. And not only by taking care of that animal are you creating downstream value, but that does come back to the producer. And so just, again, thinking about how that plays out and how that pertains to the individual operation is really important, and just to maximize economics. And, you know, frankly, the next few years should continue to be a really good run for the cow-calf producer. But again, cull cow values where they're at, again, it presents plenty of opportunities to make the good times that much better.
Well, Jesse, Patrick, thanks for your time today. Thanks for your work on this document. Again, I think just a good resource for folks to look through as they think about marketing cows and bulls.
Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron.
Well, for more information on the article that was discussed, the document discussed in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find this a couple places. It is at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association website. We also have a link to this document at beef.unl.edu. Again, the title of the document, The Right Way, The Right Time, A Guide to Cull Cattle Management.